Yeah, you're very welcome back to Tech Talk. Now, on September 9th, Apple will launch the iPhone 17, as well as, I'm sure, a few surprises along the way. But before we get to that, I want to wind the clock back ever so slightly. From a suburban garage in California to the pockets, wrists, and living rooms of over 1 billion people, this is the story of Apple.
Your work is going to fill a large part of your life. And the only way to be truly satisfied is to do what you believe is great work. And the only way to do great work is to love what you do.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality.
It's April 1st, 1976. Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, and Ronald Wayne register a new company, Apple Computer. Their first product, the Apple I, a bare circuit board sold to hobbyists for $666.66. No case, no keyboard, no monitor, just raw potential.
Club started up, and this club was based on microprocessors. And I didn't know anything about them at first. I'd been working at Hewlett-Packard on calculators for years. This little microprocessor is like the little guts of a computer, one chip. I've already got the machine that displays words from a computer on the screen and a keyboard that types to a computer. Why don't I make this little microprocessor chip my own local computer and a little bit of memory to make it work, and the right kind of memory, dynamic memory. But as a good designer, I always believed in few parts, and it was the cheapest memory that saved the parts that was going to replace other types of magnetic memory. So made a lot of right decisions and built this. I designed this machine.
The Apple II followed in 1977. Colorful, user-friendly, and a hit in schools. Apple was suddenly a player in the personal computer revolution.
Using an Apple II is very easy. The only hard part is getting your kid away from it. You see, Apples are the leading computers in schools, so even though you bought it to help you work at home, your kid will want to use it for his own homework. Of course, if all else fails, there's one last thing you can try. Get him an Apple of his own.
By the early 80s, competition was fierce, with IBM entering the PC market. Apple needed a game changer. This is where we see, for the very first time, the Macintosh, launched in January 1984 with one of the most famous ads in history.
Today we celebrate the first glorious anniversary of the Information Purification Directives. We have created, for the first time in all history, a garden of pure ideology where each worker.
The Mac's graphical interface and mouse were revolutionary.
You've just seen some pictures of Macintosh. Now I'd like to show you Macintosh in person. All of the images you are about to see on the large screen will be generated by what's in that bag.
Hello, I am Macintosh. It sure is great to get out of that bag. And accustomed as I am to public speaking, I'd like to share with you a maxim I thought of the first time I met an IBM mainframe. Never trust a computer you can't with. Obviously I can talk, but right now I'd like to sit back and listen. So it is with considerable pride that I introduce a man who's been like a father to me, Steve Jobs.
But sales stumbled and tensions boiled over at the top. In 1985, after a power struggle with CEO John Sculley, Steve Jobs was out.
Woz and I started Apple in my parents' garage when I was 20. We worked hard, and in 10 years, Apple had grown from just the two of us in a garage into a $2 billion company with over 4,000 employees. We just released our finest creation, the Macintosh, a year earlier, and I'd just turned 30. And then I got fired. How can you get fired from a company you started? Well, as Apple grew, we hired someone who I thought was very talented to run the company with me. And for the first year or so, things went well. But then our visions of the future began to diverge, and eventually we had a falling out. When we did, our board of directors sided with him. And so at 30, I was out. and very publicly out.
Without Jobs, Apple drifted. There were bright spots, the PowerBook in 1991, the Newton PDA in 1993, but there were also some flops. By the mid-90s, the company was losing money and relevance.
Financial difficulties, layoffs, buyout rumors. It's enough to make the most loyal of computer users a little skittish. Once a mighty giant in the industry, now Apple computers are given little shelf space in most stores.
I've always grown up around IBM compatibles. My dad had one. And
IBM, I was familiar with it. I knew how to move it. You could expand on it a little bit more.
Many see buying Apple's Macintosh as too limiting. In a sea of software at most stores, only a few titles will run on a Mac. That's one of the reasons IBM and all of its clones own 90% of the market. But the other 10% are extremely loyal, almost religious about their Macs.
That part of the Mac is what has kept the product alive. I mean, Mac users, when they buy a machine, they bought it 10 years ago, they keep upgrading. They're very loyal.
Macintosh Systems and Peripherals of Minneapolis sells Apple computers, but owner Michael Bartis admits the company has made mistakes.
The decision that they made that was wrong, I believe, is that they came out with too many computers, and they made it really tricky on the consumers to figure out what computer they need to buy.
In 1997, Apple made a bold move. It bought Next, the company Jobs had founded after leaving. Along with Next Software, Apple got something more valuable, Steve Jobs himself.
Well, Apple was about 90 days away from going bankrupt back then, in the early days. And it was much worse than I thought when I went back initially.
Jobs returned as interim CEO, the iCEO, if you will, and began slashing product lines, focusing on design and forging a new identity. In 1998, the iMac arrived, colourful, friendly, and unlike anything else on the market.
This is iMac. The whole thing is translucent. You can see into it. It's so cool. We've got stereo speakers on the front. We've got infrared right up here. We've got the CD-ROM drive right in the middle. We've got dual stereo headphone jacks. We got the coolest mouse on the planet right here. Come on around. All of the connectors are inside one beautiful little door here, the Ethernet, the USB stuff. Around the back, we've got a really great handle here. The back of this thing looks better than the front of the other guys, by the way. And then around the side. So let's take one more swing around it so you can see. This is what it looks like. And again, you've got to see one of these things in person.
Then came the iPod in 2001. Suddenly, 1,000 songs in your pocket. The iTunes store followed, changing how we bought music. Apple was no longer just a computer company. It was a cultural force. On January 9th, 2007, in San Francisco, Steve Jobs takes to the stage at Macworld and teases three products: a widescreen iPod, a revolutionary phone, and a breakthrough internet communicator. The big twist? They're all the same device.
A widescreen iPod with touch controls, a revolutionary mobile phone, and a breakthrough internet communications device. An iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator. An iPod. A phone. Are you getting it? These are not three separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone. Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
The iPhone didn't just disrupt the phone industry. It created the modern smartphone era. The App Store followed in 2008, and suddenly developers everywhere could put their idea in your pocket. In 2001, Steve Jobs stepped down as CEO, handing the reins to Tim Cook. Jobs died later that year, but his vision lived on. When Tim Cook took over in 2011, many wondered if the quiet, operations-minded man could fill the shoes of Steve Jobs. 14 years later, Apple's market value has soared from around $300 billion to over $3 trillion. Cook's Apple is bigger, richer, and more global than ever, but also facing a very different battlefield.
This is Ted. Ted was born in 1998, the year of the first Google search. And as a teenager, whatever Ted was looking for, Google helped him find it.
James Bond music video.
My life is brilliant.
So it went year after year. There was always some new question on his mind. Ted is 26 now. His life isn't so simple. Fortunately, Google still is.
Why is this not working? Oh.
Even when his questions are a lot of questions in one.
What's something cool happening tonight in the city and still gets me home in a reasonable time? Whoa.
Which is how Ted found something he didn't even know he was looking for.
Hey.
Turns out,
I'm Ted.
Life's full of questions. Luckily, you can just ask Google.
Apple still dominates the premium smartphone segment, holding roughly around 60% of that market. Its ecosystem, from iPhone to Apple Watch, AirPods, Macs, iPads, and a booming services arm, locks in over 2 billion active devices worldwide. Services like Apple Music, iCloud, and TV Plus now bring in over $1 billion a year, making Apple less dependent on the iPhone alone. But the competition is fierce. Samsung remains Apple's biggest global rival, especially in Asia, with a wide range of devices and a head start in foldable phones. In China, Huawei and Honor are clawing back market share with aggressive pricing and AI-powered features. Google's Pixel line is pushing computational photography and AI integration, while Microsoft, Meta and a wave of AI-first startups are challenging Apple in the next big frontier, artificial intelligence. So where are we in 2025? Well, Apple has a few big challenges. First up, the AI race. While rivals raced ahead, Apple's own Apple Intelligence push has been slower to roll out, with some features delayed until 2026. Second, the foldable phone gap. Surveys suggest up to 30% of iPhone users might switch if Apple doesn't launch one soon. Add to that the geopolitical tensions, tariffs on Chinese imports, and the delicate task of diversifying manufacturing to India and Vietnam without disrupting supply chains. And then there's the next big test, the iPhone 17, due to be unveiled on September 9th. We can expect four models, the standard iPhone, the Pro, the Max, and a brand new ultra-thin 17 Air. But all eyes will be on the pricing. Another real question will be whether these upgrades and Apple's AI features can spark another upgrade super cycle, or if consumers will hold onto their phones just a little longer.